Right now, I want to check in with David Soucy. He is a former accident investigator and now writes about airline safety and other types of transportation safety all the time, including some pretty big books. David, thank you so much for being on with us tonight. We appreciate it.
Hi, Matt. Thanks for having me again.
Absolutely. So whyplanescrash.com is the website. Why Planes Crash is a book that you have out. Malaysian Airlines Flight 370 is a book that has been out for an incredibly long time. We don't even talk about that anymore. It's crazy. It's going to be the six-year anniversary of that book coming out. So that means how many years is it going to be since the plane disappeared?
Well, it's 6 years. It'll be coming up, starting its seventh year then. So it's been full 6 years since it disappeared. And tragically, we know nothing more now than we did then.
That's amazing. That's amazing. We'll talk about that another time. Tonight, I want to talk to you about airline travel. I've talked to you on the overnight show a bunch of times, and you've said you are immunocompromised and you're not getting on a plane for quite some time. There was an article in the Chicago Tribune this week talking about two of the nation's leading infectious disease experts. One has not flown at all and won't. And one flew recently to finally visit his 90-year-old father in Florida, wearing a face shield and removing his medical-grade N95 respirator mask for just 30 seconds to chug some water and pretzels, and felt, quote, pretty safe to see everyone else wearing masks as well. If the infectious disease experts are nervous to fly, when are the rest of us going to feel comfortable? And I got to say, David, I keep hearing stories about how good, and you and I have talked about this before, more and more stories about how good the air quality is on planes, how fast it's recycled, how much new air, you've told me before, new air that comes in all the time, old air that goes out. If it was just about the air on the plane, I imagine we'd feel pretty good. It's about the people sitting on the plane that you get a little nervous about, because you don't necessarily have a chance for the air to get recycled if somebody next to you takes off their mask and sneezes or whatever else happens.
Well, you know, Matt, I've learned a lot over the last, since we spoke last time, about that air quality, and I knew that it was recycling at a certain, at a pretty quick rate, and that the air quality was as good as it would be in a hospital. But again, I was concerned about someone sitting right next to me. So I spent several hours this week on the phone with people from Chicago, from Boeing to United and others in the industry as well, and it's amazing what they've done so far to try to improve the air quality even better than it was before. So I really believe at this point, after talking with those specialists and the manufacturers, that the biggest risk right now in flying is not necessarily when you're sitting next to someone in the airplane. Surprisingly for me, because of the downdrafts in the airplane, when you're in the airplane, even someone coughing next to you, it's going to go forward and down away from you. But there's still a risk there, and that's why I don't fly still, because like you said, I've got some immunodeficiencies there that I need to overcome.
Sure.
So I need to set my own risk with that. But where the big risk is, and I think this is the part that would make me less comfortable about traveling, is the boarding of the airplane. Mm-hmm. And the deplaning of the airplane. They've really done nothing at this point to say, hey, the flight's done, you're there, you're safe, now let's all get up and leave in the same manner we used to, just kind of crowding each other to see who can get off of the plane first, because everybody wants to get off first. So it surprises me that more hasn't been done there. I mean, that's where the real risk is right now. It's not as risky sitting next to someone as it is standing up and working and moving around them, trying to grab your bags from the overhead and get them down and move forward and stand in line with people. That's where the real risk is, I think.
It's funny because we don't really think about that, do we? We talk about, 3 hours in a metal tube breathing that air, not the massive crowd to suddenly get on, or the massive crowd in the bathroom when everybody gets off the plane, or other instances such as this. So when you're talking to people in aviation, whether at Boeing or at the airlines, are they talking at all about that? Are they aware of that? Or is that kind of just this quiet, like, well, people aren't really talking about that, so we haven't really looked into that yet. People are more worried, is this middle seat going to be filled?
You know, I met with the Boeing officials just last week again. I didn't meet with them. Of course, everything's virtual with me because I've locked myself in my house for the last however long and plan to for a while yet. But I spoke with them, and they did bring that up in the teleconference. And the challenge for them is the, what I call the regulatory transition. The, who's responsible for what at what times during the whole boarding process, from the time you leave your house until you get to your get to the place you're heading to. And so there's a lot of transition between that. You go from getting in your car, from going from the car to the security, from transportation security all the way through that line, and then you go from there into the tarmac area or the waiting area, and then from there you go through the bridge. So you're going down the bridge, and that's a different regulatory set of rules than it would be in the airplane. It's a different set of rules than you would have at the airport, and a different set of the rules that you have checking in your luggage. So trying to get all of those organizations to work together to try to make that work in the same level of safety is an extreme challenge. And to complicate it even more, when you talk about international travel possibly, or even just going from within the United States, there's a lot of transitions there as well to worry about, and that has to do with, again, with security, but it also has to do with who's going to do anything about it, who has the enforcement right to say, nope, you're less than 6 feet away from each other, that's not allowed, you got to stop doing that. Who's going to say no when you're in the waiting area? Does the airport do that, or does security do that? Who does that? So those are the challenges that I see coming forward, is we need to figure out how to, you know, you talked earlier about religion and exorcism and all that kind of thing, and I'm a Catholic, and some people will call me a recovering Catholic, but nonetheless, I'm a Catholic, and I that kind of hit home with me. And I remember when in church, people would say, "Okay, this pew goes first, and that pew goes next."
Yeah.
Even when you're in weddings or whatever, it's an orderly fashion. Everybody leaves one row at a time, and it's just amazing to me that the airlines haven't figured out that they should do that. They should say, "Okay, we're going to load the last row first."
Yeah.
And then the next row, and then the next row, and then when you leave, you're going to let the first row go first, and then the second row. You know, it just doesn't make sense to me that they do all of this to protect us, and then when it comes time to leave, you're just kind of on your own.
We're speaking with David Soucy. He's an aviation safety expert. I think he's got a point there. We need ushers. We need ushers in the plane that just, you know, and if we could get the old nuns with the rulers, people would sit and they would wait because of those knuckles, they hurt. More with David Soucy from the Team Hochberg phone line. Your questions, 312-981-7200. Matt Bubala here, 720 WGN. Matt Bubala here with you, 720 WGN. We're speaking with David Soucy, airline safety expert, and other forms of transportation as well. David, when we went to the break, you were talking about how, you know, they've got to really figure out how to deboard and board planes. I know I've seen stories about studies done by, like, you know, University of Chicago researchers saying, well, this is the smartest way to, you know, board a plane and deep board a plane and do these things. The airlines don't take that into account, I imagine, because the priority passengers they want to give the most to, they don't want to just do it in this orderly fashion. That would make more sense for everybody. The people that pay more need to get a little more, so they give them that love. Is there a solution that's going to come? Or, and you mentioned who's in charge of this. Is it going to be TSA, or the airport's going to have to take a little more control? How do you think this turns out?
Well, I think that the group of people that we had on the phone are serious influencers, and I really believe that after that was brought up as the key problem with the confident traveler, with instilling confidence in the travelers, I think that really came out loud and clear in this group. There was about 15 of us aviation leaders throughout the world, and I think that now that message is getting out and through me and through the others, I think that that's really going to put a public outcry out to say, hey, you have to do something about this. It's going to impact their rebound. It's going to impact their ability to keep the people employed. It's the viability of the airlines is dependent on people being confident with traveling. You can't just simply fly people around that are 100% healthy and not afraid of getting sick, because of that, I'm sorry, that's not a large market, honestly. So everybody has some concerns about that. I think that there is something in the future that's going to help us.
Well, and it's very difficult because the airlines, they just laid off massive amounts of people today. They're not doing that well financially. So it's very tough for them to look at, I imagine, it's very tough for them to look at anything that's going to restrict things any further for the people that do fly. They want to do as much as they can. The airlines have been, I mean, we heard some stories early on, but overall, the airlines are being now very strict about wearing masks on the flights, right?
Yeah, they are being very strict about it. In fact, everyone that I've spoken to that has flown has either worn a mask or is wearing a face shield and a face shield with a hat, like a baseball cap over the top, because they feel like that would prevent anything from coming down in the top. And indeed, I think that it does increase your protection by doing that, by wearing a plastic face shield on the airplane. I've heard that a lot of people are doing that. So yeah, I think that's helpful. Quite a few other things are doing. Boeing has spoken about some things that are coming down the pike that I'm not at liberty to discuss yet, but I know that there are things that will be happening in the next month or two that will be very, very helpful with disinfecting the aircraft between flights, as well as electrostatic coatings on things, so that if there is a transmission of anything that's been touched, that there's a way to get that using static electricity. It actually pulls the disinfectant into the objects that are being touched. So it's really neat technology. It's really stepped forward on how they're going to disinfect the airplane. So I believe over the next month or two, it's going to get much, much safer to be on the airplanes. But again, if they don't do something about the boarding, they're going to have to. And I think the airlines need to understand that this isn't something that's going to make them weak. It's going to make them strong. If they can say, there was a time when airlines didn't even talk about maintenance on aircraft because the thought that an aircraft had to have maintenance was a bad thing.
Yeah.
And that shifted over time to where people that are airlines that said, hey, we have some of the best maintenance. We do the top best quality maintenance. And people understood that. And it actually helped those airlines that did that. I think you're going to see that here. The airlines that have the more strict and the more the safer processes and procedures and loading practices and things like that, if the airlines understand that that's actually good marketing for them to say, hey, we do this and we do that, and here's how we make sure you're going to stay safe. If those airlines that do that advertise it and say, here's how we're going to do this, I think that might be a very good thing for those airlines that take that path. They can't hide under a rock, pretend it doesn't exist. They have to say, yep, it's here. It's flying on the airplane with us. Here's how we're going to combat it.
Well, and I would imagine, too, because you're talking about these new technologies that are going to come out about cleaning the planes and making sure and everything else, but that's not something I'm necessarily going to see. They're going to do that between flights. And I think, really, it's in the minds of the consumer, do we feel safe? So those things, well, if they tell us about that, I'll say, okay, that's great, but I don't know in my head if I'm equating that necessarily to anything different than they're wiping things down because they're paying more attention now, versus if I get there and I do have to get in some line, if I am made to avoid everybody and they capitalize on, hey, we're doing this before. It's not just when you're in the air with us. It's when you're on the ground. It's when you're in the airport. We're protecting you at all times. Some sort of campaign like that, that I think would resonate a little more. It might be a little more annoying when you get to the airport, but if you're concerned about the safety, at least you're going to see it in action.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And you know, we've talked about that before, that what prevents an accident is everyone on the airplane realizing that they are part of the safety system.
Yeah.
When they see something going on, they need to say something about it. When something is abnormal, we talked about an accident investigation I did that was when an airplane had landed and someone was told to get back to their seat two or three times because they were trying to tell the flight attendant that there was smoke coming out from over the top of the headliner, and everybody just, oh no, that's just humidity or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But no, it was smoke, and this guy almost got arrested for standing up and making a stink about it, but then they realized, hey, it is smoke, and they landed the airplane. Everybody survived that incident with no problems whatsoever because of the fact that someone said something about the smoke. If he hadn't, they would have perished. So we are all part of that safety system, and I think giving someone something to do, so to say, here's part of our, we stay 6 feet apart, here's the process, here's the procedure. I think if you give that to people, like you say, it's something they can see, something they can understand, something that's tangible to them, that I'm doing something for my own safety and for the safety of the people around me. And I think that is going to make a big difference, and it will resonate with people.
You know, it's interesting because I don't know if people right now are really good about speaking up or not about things, because the Karen culture, if you will, of the recent times, I think in some ways people are speaking up more when they see something wrong. In some ways they're like, oh, I'm not going to get involved in this.
That's right. Yeah, people, I mean, I've found myself doing that too, and I've always been pretty boisterous about things, brassy, some might say, about, you know, justice and say the right thing, and, you know, and lately I've really gotten back on my heels about that, because you're just afraid that you're going to unnecessarily offend someone, but especially when they can't see what's happening to them. You know, I'll always do that in the interest of safety and come out and be that boisterous person. But at times I can see why people wouldn't want to be that. But you just have to get over that. You have the right to express your concerns about things. And if you can do that in a calm and sensible manner, and no one has to panic about things, but it's good to bring those up. And you just have to practice how to do that in a sensical way without being in this partisan world we have now. Yeah. It's either you're like them or you're like us, but just be like you.
Hold on.
I care about you as a person.
Hold on one second, David. We got to take a quick break for the news. David Soucy is with us, whyplanescrash.com. I want to do a few more minutes because I want to talk about where we're at with the Boeing 737 MAX. We'll do that after news right now on 720 WGN. All right, 312-981-7200 on the Team Hochberg phone line. It's our friend David Soucy. A couple more minutes with David. Whyplanescrash.com is his website. David, I did want to check in with you, though, on the 737 MAX. You and I talked quite a bit about that after those two accidents and when everything got shut down. The one benefit, I guess, for Boeing and all of this is we have not been talking much about that, and they've had more time to get through everything so those planes can be recertified. How is that coming along?
Well, I am just thrilled with what the House Transportation Subcommittee has done. They came back with a scathing report about Boeing and the FAA, and they realized that the problem wasn't with compliance. That airplane was in compliance with the regulations, but it was not safe, and people died. And the chairman DeFazio of that group out of Oregon, he knows that. He sees it, and he's doing something about it. And Steve Dixon, the administrator, actually went out and flew the airplane. Some people say, well, that was just a stunt, you know, it was something to show that they're confident in it, but it wasn't. I mean, I know Dixon, and he's a good man. He's a good pilot, and he wanted to feel it himself. I went up to, back in February, I went up to Oregon, and I flew that airplane. I didn't fly the airplane, but in the simulator, and it was in great shape then. He thinks it's in great shape now. The processes and procedures are in place. He wants to see some changes in the way they communicate those processes and procedures still. But I really think that they're on the home stretch and ready to get that airplane back in the air. And I'm confident and behind doing that. I think it's a smart thing to do at this point.
Well, one of the big things we talked about early on was the whole idea was that there wasn't going to need to be a lot of retraining done, that it was similar enough to the 737, that it wasn't going to be expensive for the airlines to retrain all the pilots. Are the changes they made going to make it more that they can still stick to that, or are they going to institute a lot more training for pilots who are going to fly the 737 MAX?
Oh, no, that's way out the window. The training they're going to have to do now is extensive. They're going to have to do a lot of training, not specifically because the airplane is that different, but because it's under such scrutiny now, and they've changed a lot of things about the way they do certification now to require training that they didn't require before. Before, you could have the same type certificate and not have additional training. It was just transition training. But now with this, they've changed that now where you have a new model out, you have to do the training on that model aircraft. So it's very different. The training is going to be very extensive.
So in the end, did the lack of air travel, of course, it's killing the airlines and it's killing Boeing, but as far as the 737 MAX, was it a bit of a blessing for that product at least?
You mean to have it out of the news as long as it was?
To have it out of the news and not have a need to hurry up and get it back flying because, you know, there's no rush to get new planes in the air. They're not using the planes that they have.
Yeah, I don't think it was. I don't think it really had that much of an impact, to be honest with you. The FAA was going to take whatever measures necessary. So was EASA over in Europe and everybody else that has to do a certification of the airplane. They were committed. Boeing was committed. Everybody was committed to doing it right and not rushing it at all. And that was evidenced by the fact that these aircraft were grounded long before COVID came into the picture. It's been 18 months now. And I think that it still would have taken the same path. Whether it made it easier on them, yeah, it most certainly did, because I remember I was on the news every other day talking about the MAX 8, and then when COVID came along, it was not that picture. So I think it did take the pressure off of them, but I do think we would have been about it the same time, going through the same things we are now, whether COVID had been in place or not.
Boeing stock is at about less than half of what it was at its high before this all happened. Are they going to rebound? Are they going to be okay?
They are going to be okay. You know, you have to realize that particular airplane and even commercial airplanes in general are only a percentage of what they do. They have a lot of other big picture items that they're working on. Boeing has their fingers in a lot of things within aviation, within defense, and also within space. And space is booming right now, and there's a lot of things going on in space, and Boeing is a serious partner and a very big player in that space. Pardon the pun, but they will make a they'll hold solid. They will come back, and especially with some of these things that are coming out now to help combat the COVID-19, not only in their airplanes but other things that they're doing that will help in other areas as well. So I think Boeing is going to be in a good place to have a great rebound.
And we mentioned earlier on the story, the book you wrote that came out, it'll be 6 years ago this February when the book came out about Malaysian Airlines Flight 370. We still don't know anything. You said we're no further to knowing anything. But in the subtitle of your book, it was, and why it's only a matter of time before this happens again. So almost 7 years later, it hasn't happened again. Do you still think things are ripe for a plane to disappear?
Yeah, actually, it did happen again. There was a couple of other airplanes that disappeared, although they did find those airplanes. And since that time, there's been great advances in airplane tracking, and almost every airline I'm aware of has increased. If you remember, it was part of the problem was that they didn't buy the upgraded tracking software. The airplane was capable of it, but they hadn't purchased that. So almost every airline I know of now, I don't know of any that don't, have the more advanced tracking. So that's made some advances there. And it's all about, you know, managing that risk and deciding how much money to pay, which is a quick transition into my next book that's going to be coming out, too.
When is your next book coming out, and what's that on?
Funny you should ask. So I'm writing a book called Risk IQ right now, and we should have that out fairly soon. And it will take some of these advanced risk tools that I've been working with over the years with the airlines and with different risk management teams, and kind of paring that down so that people can use them at a personal level and help understand the risks that they face, not only with COVID, but with cars and driving and auto driving and artificial intelligence and how it affects their lives. So I'm really excited for that to come out. It'll probably be another 2 to 3 months before we'll get that on the presses.
Risk IQ, we'll have you back when it comes out. WhyPlanesCrash.com is the website. David's a great follow on Twitter at David_Soucie, Soucie. He tweets a lot of times about safety, not related just to planes. I remember when there was an Amtrak crash in the Pacific Northwest a few years ago, a big one. I remember talking to you about that at the time.
So, positive train control, yeah.
Yeah. So David keeps up with all of that. Great to have you on as always. Thanks so much, David.
Thank you, Matt. Have a great night.
You too. We'll talk to you again soon. David Soucie, again, at Twitter, at David_Soucie.